There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit YahooFinance.com, the number one financial destination, YahooFinance.com.
Yo guys, welcome to The Last Lap.
Don't forget to drop a lovely, juicy five-star rating if you're watching an Apple Podcast or Spotify.
Hope you enjoy, and let's get into it.
Welcome back everyone to The Last Lap Podcast. Post-race Azerbaijan Grand Prix, we're going to go straight to guest Sam. What did you think, mate? Sam?
Oh, is it finished? Is it over?
It's over. It's done.
It's finally over.
It was thrilling. What can I say?
Thank you, everyone, for coming. Whether you're audio only,
like
on
and
YouTube,
subscribe, everyone.
Like, subscribe.
We'll see you next
all
time.
That. The race was dull. Okay, we all understand. We all comprehend. We all sat for it together.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's still plenty to talk about that we didn't cover. That isn't maybe so much tied to the race. But boys, Pete as well. Thank you for coming back.
Yeah, thank you for having me once again. Big up everyone, McLaren
through
and
that
TV
news fest.
Hey, listen,
us.
Sergio Perez won the race. It wasn't Max Verstappen. Happy days.
Look, it's someone different.
Oh, let me disclaimer. Sorry. No, I'm not anti-Max. I just want to title
this.
How dare you?
Did you just say you were anti-Max?
British bias. What I want to echo to it.
Still British bias.
Mexican bias from Pete there.
He's not letting go of Abu Dhabi.
Look, again, I'm sure even the most ardent Verstappen fan, you don't want anyone to walk away with it. Mm. And it's keeping it interesting. There's 6 points between them now.
Indeed, yeah.
Max on 93, Checo on 87.
Cheeky sprint win for Perez and then the race win as well. Yeah, I think honestly, the way this season is going, we can just hope for a title battle. And that is about it. Red Bull are, 93 points clear now in the Constructors' Championship. So
yeah, that's done.
If you are hoping for anyone else to win races this season, it ain't happening. It's not happening unless there's a crazy race. So, just wanting Perez to do well just to keep a title race alive is what we've got hope
Which we've
for.
Had it in the past. You know, Mercedes, when they were clear in 2014, you know, you had Hamilton and Rosberg tripping
over
each other.
Hamilton season, well, couple seasons, elite entertainment.
But it's a lot to ask, isn't it, of Sergio to be able to keep up this proximity of performance to Max. You know, it is a street circuit next week in Miami as well, which is typically a good place for Checo. But, you know, Max is good at every track. I think Checo struggles somewhat at the more traditional circuits compared to just how good he is at a street circuit. Mm. He's a bit of a specialist, isn't he, Sam?
It's a lot to ask, but yeah, he's stepping up, and he particularly stepping up on street tracks. And we now have like half the season of street tracks. So
it's Miami, true.
The opportunity is there.
Point.
Like yeah. Miami's next.
Car park track.
We're expecting to be good there. We're going to like Monaco soon. Like, there is a chance. There is a chance for Perez to start racking up a few more wins in the next few races, I would say. It could happen.
But didn't we say
confidence
this
stuff as well? You know,
he
racks up a couple, then
it's momentum.
I'm just wary because, you know, we said this so many times, particularly with Hamilton and Bottas as well. Bottas would come out of the gates swinging and
2.0.
Yeah.
3.0.
Yeah. Mm. Orange.
But just maintaining that over the course of an entire championship, Max has been there, done that. He's got two under his, you know. And I think, you know, we're seeing Red Bull support Checo as well, which is great. They're giving him the chance, the opportunity. And I think, you know, he won this race as much as he kind of lucked out somewhat on the safety car timing relative to Max. I think he won this race on merit because Max couldn't catch him, could he?
Yeah. I think there is reason to be optimistic about Sergio this season, because I think, you know, he's got better, I think, as a driver as well. I don't know if we're seeing it too soon, but like, you know, I feel like he's actually stepped up the level a little bit, and we're not seeing Max as dominant as what we're used to seeing from Max Verstappen this season.
Even outside of the street track stuff, I think just general pace wise, we've not seen Sergio like 6 tenths off.
No.
Or anything ridiculous. Like, yeah. I think he's been within sort of, I think there was, Australia was like a one, obviously because he went off and started right towards the back. But I think there's not been that many sessions where I've seen him above.
And he seemed to have car issues, back. I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a car, that was a brake sort of issue.
It was once upon a time 80-20 to Max Verstappen, but I think it's a bit 65-35, you can argue, to Max. So the fact that there's a bit more of an improvement from Sergio, as well as, you know, maybe Max might not be having it all his way this season. I'm looking forward to it. I think the title race is on, and I think Sergio will be there at least halfway.
You're right. Well, because I guess when Checo was signed to that team, there would have been no like sugarcoating it. Like, you're here to support Max Verstappen's title challenge. Like, that would have been the dynamic, I'm sure, in 2021.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I don't know. I think he kind of would have known that, but I think Red Bull would have, because they've never outwardly said either that he's a
second. I don't think that'd been written in his contract, but I think
that's what I'm saying. I don't,
verbally, it would have been like, the implication is like, you help out Max.
But I think the way Red Bull do it is they won't tell him that, they'll just start sabotaging him, is what they'll do. They'll, like, something will happen if he does get closer.
Yeah.
I think it's going to start happening to Perez. Like, you're meant to understand these things at Red Bull.
Yeah.
Which is clearly not what happened with previous drivers.
And I think it's because I think Max is quite a challenging personality to manage as well, because he's so hyper competitive. We saw that obviously yesterday with the, you know, getting in Russell's face a little bit. And we've seen it in the past. Like, managing Max Verstappen and not just Max and his team as well, because, you know, Jos is very involved. Like, after Monaco last year, Jos was putting out mad statements about it.
You know what
I mean? Like, I think it's a difficult, I don't envy the job of Christian Horner to try and manage that team. As much as they've got a great car, they've got a driver in Max who's such a personality and he's such an incredible driver. And we said this on stream, you know, part of what makes him so great is that fire that he has and that uncompromising nature. But also, when it's not all going his way or the team's way, and you've got a teammate who's close, then it's like, you know, we saw it with Ricardo Verstappen, that blew over a few times.
Yeah.
So what do they do going forward? How does Christian manage that relationship? That's what I wonder, I guess, because it's, I mean, 6 points between them.
Yeah, the skeptics probably will agree with Sam in the sense that, you know, Sergio Perez, all of a sudden this sort of the rug will be pulled underneath him, and it will be a case of, remember when we signed you, you didn't even have a seat next year, the year after. You know, it all kind of worked in Red Bull's favour in 2021, because we were looking at a man who's just won a race in Sakhir not have a drive for the following year. So it's going to be, you could see, I don't have any hope in Red Bull sort of being nice to Sergio Perez in any way, shape or form, but if the title race is, you know, really neck and neck, come towards, let's say, 5-6 races to go, Red Bull will be happy that the constructors will be done. It'll be done. They'll have about 800 points in front of the next team. What are they now? 94, you said, right? 94.
That's
points.
That's crazy.
After four. So if it was to carry on as it is now, I'm just trying to do the maths.
Yeah,
we're about like a sixth of the way through the season.
Yeah.
So times.
Yeah, it's going to be mad. It's going to be really mental, bad.
So
it's going to be
points ahead.
Really, really bad, guys. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. They're going to be 500 points ahead.
It will be interesting to see how Red Bull manage Verstappen and what comes with Verstappen alongside Sergio if the race is on.
Well, I guess we kind of have to somewhat address again what happened yesterday and between Russell and Verstappen.
Saturday?
Not yesterday from this podcast, yesterday from today.
So, I got you.
Ah, nice.
I got you, bro. I guess, you know, we've had the race. I think Max, you know, he didn't win the sprint and he had that contact with George, finished P3, big hole in the side of his car. I don't know. Are we all deep in this too much, right? Because I think having these drivers that, you know, there's a bit of spark and a bit of, you know, this isn't the first time George and Max have kind of come close to, you know, I don't think there's a lot of, what can I say? The relationship that Max has with, say, Lando, I think it's very different to the relationship, and Charles, I think.
Yeah.
There's a difference maybe between the relationship between him and George, for example. And I think there's the potential, because George is proving everything he needs to right now.
Yeah.
That he's right up there. I think this is a, like, I think this is a battle, not just in terms of two drivers, but in two personalities and characters we're going to see play out for years to come.
I think it's an interesting one because I think actually on track, they're very similar. Yeah. In their driving style, they're both very aggressive.
Very uncompromising.
Which I think lots of people don't realise because Ross was so not aggressive outside the car.
Yeah, you're right.
Whereas Max, he's a granddad.
A persona outside of a car as well.
Yeah exactly. Max, it fits and you see him talk and then it makes sense.
Yeah.
Russell is fully a granddad. But he gets in the car and he drives exactly the same as Max. You will go for those gaps that don't exist.
Yeah.
Not to say it didn't exist this time, but like, he will keep pushing. If he's next to Max, he'll push Max. And Max actually doesn't like that. He's used to people, you know, conceding to him.
Hopping out of the way a little bit because he's quite a intimidating presence, I think.
Well, that's why I don't think Max can realistically get too upset about what happened. Yes, he got the rough end of it. That could have easily been like a Russell puncture and Russell getting more damage. Like, it's one of them that it happens, he got more damage. But ultimately, if you're going to go wheel to wheel, and that's on both of them, they both went into that corner, like not conceding at a circuit like Baku. This is going to happen sometimes. This is part of it.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest with you, lads. We're being too nice. Max was just whinging for no reason. I was a bit fed up of it, really, by the end of the race. Like, I don't have a problem with Max. And in terms of, like, I think, again, we mentioned it before on the show, we were sort of like, it brings out that motivation in him.
Yeah.
Like, being so passionate about, like, every single minute detail.
Yeah.
Every single point that matters. Like, literally, he's missed out on, like, probably one point.
Especially now
he's behind Perez anyway.
Especially now he's used to winning as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it completely fuels him. But I think in this situation, it was kind of like, come on, lads. Of all people, we're going to talk about being slightly overly aggressive on lap one. You're not the guy.
No.
You're not the guy to talk about. Like, let's be real. You've been the guy who's dished that out before.
Mm. Yeah.
It happens. Don't disregard George saying, you know, because George apologized as well. Mm. George genuinely was like, oh yeah,
He apologized.
Yeah, he apologized and then like walked off and then like
Max just wasn't letting it go though.
Max called him a dickhead as he walked off. I was just sort of like,
did George say something that wasn't audible as well? Because I think it sounded like he apologized, but then there was like a little bit of murmuring as he left and it was almost just like, yeah, you mug. And then I think maybe sort of Verstappen was like,
maybe he was like, I'm sorry you didn't DNF.
Sorry I didn't take
you harder. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget the whinging, Max. Like, just move on, grow up. But I'll say this, we wanted some rivalry, didn't we?
Yeah.
We've got something spicy going on.
Yeah, it's great.
And for years to come, I mean, these are two young drivers. Mm-hmm. We're going to see a good battle over the years between these two, which I'm looking forward to. Two drivers that are aggressive, as you've mentioned as well. But yeah, it's just ironic. I mean, shout out to Will Buxton, who sort of said, like, you know, of all people to be arguing about this, you've made a career out of doing this exactly in a good way, not slating him, just saying, like, you know, we love you because of this as well.
Yeah.
So how on earth can we now be, you know, getting all, and it's just one of those, isn't it? Everyone's emotional. You've been hit, you've come on the wrong end of it. So yeah, I get him upset for the time being, but we know Mr. Verstappen will hold this and comes to Suzuka, and when he decks him at the end of the race, he'll be like, I remember that time in Baku.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because especially with what we saw with Sergio, the Monaco Sergio thing, and then whenever it was that he retaliated, it was in Brazil, it was just like, huh? What's going on here?
That's the difference though, isn't it? Because like, I think a lot of drivers were just sort of, it happens. And then one thing we have to bear in mind is, Max had gotten out of the car about 6 seconds before this happened.
Yeah.
He's just seen a massive hole in his car and gone, well, I'm pissed off now.
Yeah.
So obviously he's going to be annoyed when we see him on the TV. Like, it's that raw emotion.
But the difference is with Max, operator was straight up.
Over there,
saw them two talking.
I'm in. I've been in the mall with Ocon.
Funny enough though, on radio, didn't his engineer say, oh, you got floor damage? And then he was like, oh, what's that because of? And then the engineer's like, well, what do you think?
Yeah, engineer was given attitude as well. Yeah, I was so like, hang on a second.
GP was given attitude.
Yeah.
And then later, he goes past, I can't remember who it was actually.
Yeah, Overton.
And GP on the radio is like, oh, nice one. And you did it cleanly.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
I was like, wow.
GP's that vegan.
Yeah.
I think he just knows that rage. Like,
he knows how
he loves it.
So it's,
I think it's a net positive for Max.
Like,
he's right. Because sometimes he does hold on to stuff too much. And sometimes it, like with Brazil, that created a situation for no real reason. His reaction has created a talking point for us to like, talk about, because we don't see this very often, like, yeah, yeah, like verbally coming to blows, right? We don't see it often. If it happened all the time, we wouldn't really be talking about it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, but I think it's a net, yeah, overall, he still gains more than he loses in a bit of, like, maybe a bit of sloppy decision-making at times when he doesn't. Yeah. Like, just, there's a time to let things go, but ultimately, again, this is what I'm most happy with, is we've seen them go to wheel multiple times now, since George jumped in a Mercedes anyway. I remember, like, Catalunya last year being like a really good scrap between the two.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is one of those battles that, you know, we talked a lot about Verstappen, Leclerc. It's going to be exciting. Hopefully, you know, Lando can get a car to prove that he's at that right, at that sharp end level as well. But if Mercedes can pull their fingers out, then I think George Russell has everything to go wheel to wheel with Max as well. Yeah, it's sizing up nicely. These regulations just need to do their job and get all the cars nicely together. All the teams need to do their jobs, right, within the regulations, because it's on the teams to step up.
I mean, that is it, yeah. The rest of the, you know, we're looking at Mercedes, we're looking at Ferrari, we're going, guys, come on, pick it up now.
Yeah.
You know, had a year, you've got more wind tunnel time.
Yeah, and you got further away, so. Yeah.
You've had a year to look at that Red Bull, take a million pictures. You could have fully just copied the Red Bull at this point.
Yeah, just traced it.
You could have just done
paper, a tracing paper out.
Just get some blue tack and just put it under the floor and, oh, there's the impression. Perfect, done. Well, look, because I think another subject we wanted to kind of touch on, because there's been a few quotes from Red Bull, Daniel Ricciardo. Obviously, he's got that reserve role at Red Bull this year. And I think at the start of the season, you know, my preseason predictions, I was very much expecting another significant gap between Max and Checo, and Checo not being so happy about it, maybe not playing ball quite as much, which isn't what's happening. He's overperforming my expectations anyway, and I was always like, I think Daniel's got an opportunity to come back. But what do we, because there's a quote from Daniel talking about the lack of F1 seats available next season, seemingly, because I don't think there's any really clear and obvious ones apart from maybe Sauber, if he believes in the long-term projects. But he said, I don't just want any seat next year. I don't want to just start from zero. Like, do we think that Ricciardo's lack of preparedness to take a mid to low table seat, because as we saw from this race, and we've seen, like, nine teams have got to Q3 now. Yeah. So there's not really there's a midfield, but that implies there's an end of field, which there isn't really anymore.
Yeah.
Like, do we think that could maybe get in the way of him coming back to the sport? Because I guess it depends what he wants, right?
I think it's fair enough what you said. Like, the bottom half of the table is for, realistically, new drivers to come in and show their worth and then get into a top team. He's been in a top team. He's won races. If he goes to a bottom team, maybe you can make the argument that he's going to prove that he's back. New Ricciardo. But people will have that data, even from his Red Bull testing. Like, he's in the simulator.
Yeah.
They can figure out how quick he is still. All that he can really get from going to a lower table team is to prove that he's still not back, basically.
Yeah.
So I think it's kind of fair play from him to just wait.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point? Because
some drivers have dipped, like Magnussen dips.
Yeah.
And then he wanted to come back because he missed it. And I just wonder how much Daniel will be prepared to... Does he just want to get back to F1 at all costs, or is it only for a competitive seat?
I mean, judging from that, like, it seems to be more of a, I want to get back into Formula One because I want to challenge for things again, rather than I just miss it.
No, I think he knows how it works. Say in Haas, Hülkenberg has come in doing a fantastic job. He's like absolutely smashing it, beating Magnussen every session, basically. No one's talking about Hülkenberg going to a better team. That's kind of not how it works.
Yeah.
I think Ricciardo knows.
Especially
well enough.
Especially once you're in your 30s as well.
Yeah.
Those kind of opportunities are less likely to present, because you're not this exciting potential driver that could be the future.
Like, Sergio did it. He went from Racing Point to Red Bull, and that was like the only time that anyone's jumped.
It's also relied on Alex not being good enough.
Like, it also was an upper mid-table team anyway.
Exactly.
Like, if we're being honest, like,
and he won a race.
He can't go Alpine, because the whole Renault link,
that door's closed.
That door's closed. Can't go McLaren. That door's closed. So already you're looking at the two teams that you would argue are most likely to break out of the midfield.
And potentially get that one-off win.
Yeah, and potentially get a one-off win where you can really showcase your ability again to teams that are bigger and better. They're out of the question already. That's just a no-go zone straight off the bat. So then you've got, obviously, Red Bull, fine, but Sergio's doing well. Ferrari are set up for a while. Mercedes are set up for a while. Aston Martin, Stroll's dad literally owns the whole thing. So yeah, you're probably done out there as well. Like, the most realistic move for him is probably Sauber.
Who are the worst car right now on the grid.
Right. Yeah, but it's a project. It is a project. And if Audi genuinely do start to turn things around, fine. But they're not going to even really get their teeth into things properly until 2026. Can he really be asked?
Does he try and do a Vettel? Vettel took the project at Aston Martin, but didn't see it through to reap the rewards, but certainly helped. I mean, obviously, Pete, you're a McLaren fan. You had Ricciardo last year.
Yeah.
You know, Ricciardo's talked to you. There's been, I don't know if you've seen the quotes, him saying, like, you know, he was all at sea when he first jumped in the Red Bull simulator. Red Bull didn't recognise the driver. He picked up loads of bad habits, apparently. Right. Like, what do you make of that? Because, you know, Carlos has talked about this McLaren being a bit weird to drive. Obviously, Lando doesn't know any different. Mm. Oscar does know the Alpine, but he doesn't. Yeah, you know, he's still young, so he's very adaptable.
Yeah.
Like, what do you make of that from a... How do you look back on Ricciardo? Do you think he's good enough? How much of that going south was on Ricciardo versus maybe on McLaren?
Oh, it's a tough one. You base it on the fact that what Piastri is doing in the McLaren right now, that's the problem that stands against Ricciardo. Ricciardo's probably had all the points in terms of, like, yeah, the McLaren car's not the greatest to drive, and so, you know, it's very, very rigid. It's very, you have to, you know, the glove has to fit type thing. And we would have all probably been on board with that. I'm watching Piastri now thinking, hang on a minute, why is he doing better than Ricciardo already?
How much better is he doing?
Well,
because I've not really looked at the numbers. Like, there's the delta between Norris and Piastri versus
Norris. It's the pace and the fact that Norris and Piastri are not that far apart from each other.
Are they not? So they're not that far?
They're not that far. Not the same gap as Ricciardo and Norris. Mm. It's early doors, but, like, it's still, I don't know, there's a part of me.
And he's a rookie, remember?
And he is a rookie.
Like,
so
that's the extra thing. Even if the delta was the same, it's like, he's a child. So
But
he is like half Ricciardo's age.
Mental, isn't it?
Don't get me wrong, I'm very sad that Ricciardo can't seem to get in that top elite team. Because I look at Ferrari, for example, and I think, do you know what, though? If you've got the choice between Sainz and Ricciardo, who are you taking? I'd take Ricciardo. Personally speaking, but I know that the contracts are locked. I know things like that are locked.
I think Alpine should have gone for Ricciardo personally.
And I think, from what we, based on what we saw, I mean, depends how much, you know, we believe in stories and such, but I was so shocked last year that Ricciardo was rejecting contracts, because it seemed like people were offering them to him, i.e. Haas and Williams and so on. And maybe, I think Alpine, I don't know what was the sort of, there was something there that kind of sort of stood against him, because he'd been at Renault before and just left.
Yeah. Well, there was that interview, wasn't there? I think it was Rachel Brooks. And
yes.
Like, if Alpine wanted you, would you go? And he was like, yes.
Yeah. So it kind of feels like, you know, obviously Drive to Survive is what it is, but then you kind of had like the sort of a door where it was like, yeah, they looked at Ricciardo several times. Mm. And so it was almost like, it's like he rejected them, or they sort of thought, no, we'll go with Gasly, we'll give it a shot. Because, I mean, going for Gasly is probably the bigger risk, just because of the relationship that he has with Ocon, right? So it's just all sad and weird for me. And I feel like the fact that, I get it, he wants to stand his ground and be like, look, unless I'm challenging for race wins, I don't want to be involved in this sport. But a talent like Daniel Ricciardo not being on the grid is absurd. And we could have had another Checo sort of Racing Point Perez type thing, where if he's in a Haas or if he's in that Williams, I'm sure he would squeeze everything out of that car, and we would be looking at his performances thinking, oh, do you know what? If something's wobbly in the top teams, they've got to look at Ricciardo. They've got to have another look at him. So,
I've definitely noticed his absence. I don't know about you boys, but I feel like I've noticed his absence.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, you feel that lack of energy in interviews and like between the sessions. Definitely it feels a bit more grey now.
No, definitely. It's just one driver, but you don't know what you got until it's gone, I suppose.
Absolutely. Mm,
You just always get a little bit of character, a little bit of edge, you know.
Yeah.
Rocking up to Austin on a horse, do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, no one's
especially
doing that
when
now.
It's a shit race.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my lord.
What do we obviously the race wasn't great, but terrible. Obviously it was the first attempt at this new sprint format.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Overall, you know what I want to do? I want all four of us to propose our own, based off what we saw, based off what we think should be.
Yeah.
But we all have to have competitive running on Friday, Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
How would we redesign it? I'll go first, because I've already thought about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, we should have FP1, one session practice, that's fine. Maybe you could make it a little bit longer if you wanted to. I wouldn't be massively against it, maybe half hour longer, but as it is, fine, an hour, cool, fine. Qualifying, normal qualifying on Friday. I can live with that. I can live with the Saturday being a separate thing on its own. So I'm happy. That's fine. Yeah. But then the Saturday qualifying, I think, should be two sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Session one, 10 cars go out. As in 10 cars get knocked out instead of five.
Okay.
At the end of the first session. Everyone's on mediums. I was quite happy with that because then you can one set of tyres, you can push, then pull, and then push again. Like, that felt a bit different. That felt a bit F2-esque, and I was quite happy with that.
Yeah.
But then SQ2 would be one shot in reverse order. So whoever was 10th in SQ1 goes first, because then you're incentivized to push harder in SQ1 to get a slightly, because track evolution will be minimal on one shot compared to you've got 20 cars going around for 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Maybe say 15 minutes in SQ1. Do that. And then also allow changes to the cars, allow part ferme to, you know, but between the sprint, so keep happy with the sprint, please, maybe mandate a one stop in the sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And then allow part ferme changes between the sprint and the race Sunday. Bosh. That's what I'm saying. That's Tomo's addition.
I quite like the qualifying change. Quite like the sprint quality change.
Because I think that makes it different.
That would make it very different to like the normal. Like, as we were saying on the show, it felt quite weird having like, cool, we've just done Friday quali for the GP, for the Grand Prix. We've just sorted that out. All right, safe. We'll see you tomorrow morning for the same thing again.
Exact same thing.
The exact same thing, but a tiny bit shorter to the point where you don't even really notice.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, yes, tactically, it was a little bit different because you had people going out on mediums and stuff, and it was quite sort of constant times rather than it was almost like a wet quali where people are just out the whole time in comparison to, right, one lap, in you come, one lap, boom.
Yeah.
So it was slightly different, but overall, the actual structure of it was just too samey. So I like that. And you don't get the thing that you had with old school one shot, where I'm watching a Minardi go around for no reason at the start of the session and no one cares. Like, realistically.
Yeah. It's the final 10, which are all typically within just over a second now. It's like 1.2, 1.3.
And it's the top 10 that you ultimately probably care most about.
Yeah.
So that's calm.
And if someone crashes, you're not ruining anyone else's lap. Yeah. There's no slipstream advantages. There's none of that traffic.
For what it's worth, I really do like the fact that they've made it so separate. Because I think the problem was with the sprint before is that if you made a mistake or something happened in the sprint, it actually affected your race weekend fully.
Sure.
Like your Grand Prix. Yeah, if you retired from the sprint, that's it. You're starting last.
Yeah.
So it needed to be separate so that people would actually go for it properly in the sprint. I'm going to give my layout now. I'm just going to go for vibes.
Go on.
Okay, right. So
buckle up, everyone.
We're going for vibes. All right, let's not be too stupid here. We'll do free practice one. Okay. We'll do FP1. We'll start things off with a nice little practice session.
Okay.
But it's only 10 minutes long.
Four laps. It's four laps.
Wow. Max, boys. You've got to learn that quick, yeah?
Wow.
But we've got places to be. We've got things to do.
Engineers writing death threats sent to your house
Hang on, hold your horses, Carl. I'll give you more practice time later. But so you've got FP1, yeah? Then we'll go into
FP.1.
FP.1.5, no. Then we'll go into, I think, the sprint quali, I think, obviously makes the most sense. For me, I think getting everything out of the way sprint-wise before we start focusing on the Grand Prix makes a little bit more sense, because we had a situation. I personally kind of forgot what happened low-key from Friday quali because the sprint stuff had happened in the middle. So let's do the sprint stuff first, yeah? Let's have a... I'm not going to lie, I'm going to steal your format for the sprint. We're just going to say we collabed on it before the show. But yeah, I like that. Yeah. Remove the bottom 10 and do one-shot quali. That sounds sick. I rate that a lot. And then we'll do the sprint race on the Friday. So you've got a little FP1 session.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the sprint quali.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up.
What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
You got the sprint all out of the way, sorted on the Friday. Yeah, lots of running.
Yep.
All right. Now, Saturday, we move on. We do our normal qualifying session for the Grand Prix. We do two more 10-minute free practice sessions for no reason. For no reason.
You wouldn't even be able to get now.
And yeah.
It's like a 1 minute break between them, but you have to come in apart. Yeah. And then we go again.
A further additional qualifying session, double or nothing.
Right.
So you can go out.
You can go out if you want to.
Yeah.
But it's a risk. If you go slower, you drop down positions on the grid. If you go quicker.
I'd like to see you
and you get another
this out a bit more. Let's get like a deck together.
Should we have another fourth practice session?
That's time for another practice.
Yeah, there's plenty of time. There's always more.
How about we stop the race halfway and they can do another practice?
I like that. That's a 6 minute practice session right there.
That is brilliant.
P5.
Oh my goodness!
And then we'll do the race on the Sunday.
Okay. Brilliant. And the race is unchanged. It's not going to be like sprinklers or ramps or
ramps. Pretty wavy to be fair. Mandated four stop.
Oh god, marbles all over the track.
Yeah.
Pete, you were saying earlier, I think you're a little bit more against isolating the sprint race from what you were saying.
So what I was saying
what do you think? What would be your ideal?
My layout, okay, so you have FP1 Friday. This is Friday. FP1 early doors, morning, 9 a.m. Straight out get after early. Breakfast.
Yeah. Boom, separate the men from the boys.
We're in, yeah. I would have, so you'd have practice and I'll probably make that maybe like an hour and a half. And then I'd have.
Are you sure? Not 10 minutes?
No, not 10. 10's a bit peak. And then, so all my sprint is on the Friday, by the way, the sprint situation, shootout and blah, blah. But I wouldn't have a shootout I wouldn't even do a sprint quali. What it will be, the starting grid for the sprint race would be the finished positions from the last race. So what happened in Australia, what was 1 to 20 in Australia is what starts the sprint race on Friday. Then on Saturday, we turn over a new leaf. You have FP3 in the morning, then we'll have quali. Now, I like your shootout, your one go, isn't it? Basically shootout type thing. I would like to do it like, because my pet peeve is traffic in quali in Formula One. I hate it with a passion. So every driver is going to have, I would say 5 minutes. The reason I say 5 minutes is so that you can get two bites of the cherry. You're going to get two laps to do your fastest time. So if you do flop your first lap after the out lap, you get one more hit at it. Each driver is going to have 5 minute sections to basically put in their time to qualify for the race on Sunday.
All
20. That's no, barely. No. Well, 5 times 20 is, my maths is terrible, 100, right? So
100 minutes.
100 hour. Minutes. Yeah. So, I mean, quali is how long? 40. Hour?
An hour, yeah.
But it's gonna probably double.
So, you know, we'll move it on a bit there, but just purely because the time in total from when we've had P1 to when we finish the race, it's still the same amount of time. Quali is a bit longer because everybody gets to have their go. And that's how I would do that for that situation. And the race, and the sprint race, by the way, 10 laps. I don't want 17 laps. I don't want anything more than 10
laps. It's 100 kilometers, isn't it now?
Well, let's bring that down then. Let's make it 50 kilometers. Okay? Like, as in, because I feel like the sprint race is in that middle bit of too long for it to be short, but then it's too short for it to be a normal race.
I do see what you mean with that.
That's my only thing with sprint races in general. But I love more action on the weekend, so I'm always up for a sprint weekend. I'm pro sprint weekends, let's be clear.
I don't know whether it's because of what we're used to with just like seeing an F1 race last for ages, but like it does always feel like the sprint just is a little bit like it just ends abruptly.
Sure.
So it's almost like you're just getting into it and then it's like, okay, now it's done. Mm. I feel like honestly having pit stops during it would kind of
maybe remove that a little bit. I don't know whether, like, because then you've got defined stints almost. You've got like, right, cool, you're going to be on this tire for like 5 laps, then the next one for 12.
It's like two sets of softs.
Yeah. You have to wait, yeah.
Well, because when it's a short race, there's less opportunity for gaps to open up for you to pit into.
Yeah.
There's less opportunity to be strategic about
there's
when
no
you
strategies.
Hit. Yeah.
It's meant to be pure driving, but that's not really how it works sometimes in Formula One.
Yeah. So I think I wouldn't be against chucking a mandatory pit stop into the current sprint as it is with 100 kilometres.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be against
that. I'm not against that either.
All right, Sam, take it away. You've taken in our genius, especially
Neon. I'm going to propose is theft. Right, so.
Good start. I'm down.
I'm going to be stealing all kinds of stuff. So basically, we're going Friday. FP1, I like it. You need to set up the car a little bit, otherwise it's just a shambles.
Yeah, fair enough.
Go in. I'd say make it longer because you want to see more cars on track.
Yeah,
and
make it a bit longer.
Need more time to like sort out these silly things happening. Friday evening, quali, normal quali for the race.
Yep.
I think that's fine. That makes sense. I can see why you do that then and not like, we'll do that. Saturday, sprint day, have it as its own thing. But the morning, I want them to steal Formula E head-to-head qualifying.
Mm.
I don't know if
explain to anyone.
Formula E.
Explain to anyone.
Probably not.
what happens in Formula E qualifying?
So it's like a normal quali session. You get like Q1, normal, everyone goes out. The top eight from that then go into this head-to-head thing. So you get first versus eighth, second versus seventh. They send those pairs out 10 seconds apart or like 8 seconds apart. Out at the end of the pit lane, and they both are like on the same out lap and then push lap and then in lap. And what that means is because they're only a few seconds apart, you can have a like relative gap through the mini sectors.
Yeah.
And so you can see they're 0.2 behind, catching up 0.1 behind. And then that goes in, it's like a quarterfinal, semifinal, final. It's great. It's fantastic in Formula E. Just steal it. Yeah. I know Formula E is a different thing, but it's all...
And also, they're far enough away that if someone shunts, then, well, they've lost their...
Yeah, they're like, they're like 8 seconds apart, so there's enough time to get flags out. Yeah. It's the same as if someone crashed in front if you're in the race. Like, we can manage that. That's fine. Do that, because that's then completely different.
Mm.
The sprint quali we had on Saturday, it's just the same thing. So get rid of that. Yeah. Sprint race, make it shorter. Literally, like, so it's definitely soft tyres. Everyone's just going for it. Maybe a few more points, so it's kind of worth it as well.
Do you think pit stop in the sprint race? Because that does...
I think it has to be more different.
That adds to the strategy. Yeah. Like, it gets the pit crews involved as well. Like, it'd be like why I think Monaco should be a two-stop, because you're adding more potential for, you know, difference of strategy. Not even just chaos. It's just, the team is more involved in the outcome rather than just setting up the car and sending out the drivers.
I see what you're saying, but basically we're just designing the race, like the Sunday race again.
Yeah.
I can see they want it to be different. So I'd say make it shorter and then you have to just go on soft and push. Or, alternative proposal, all of the Saturday, no quali, you just do a full reverse championship order race.
So
you can't do it first weekend.
Reverse.
After that point, championship leaders, P20. That would be mental.
That would be crazy. Mental.
That would be mad.
Then it all comes down to the entertainment versus sport thing with that, doesn't it? Because a lot of people don't like the idea of a reverse grid, which
it's fabricated and...
Yeah.
But they're trying to do something. Putting a whole other race in is fabricated.
Well, the F2 has the reverse top 10, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, they used to do the full reverse.
Did they used to do the full? I don't know.
Right at the start.
I think they did.
Yeah, because I think reversing the top 10 in F2 works. I think the whole grid, you got some of these like
it's different.
You don't want Cordial starting P1, let's just say that.
Jesus Christ.
F2 is more about performance than it is about results. You know, I mean, you can come fifth in F2 and then just still got
That's true.
It's about showcasing your performance.
Yeah, I think we can all agree that what is in place right now isn't it.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's close to it.
It's not a mile off.
It's better than it was before. Again, the original sprints where you got like 3 points for winning and like the top three got points and that was it.
Yeah.
Was just so dumb because it didn't incentivize anyone to try. And it was just there as like an extra little race session that no one really cared about.
But because it was linked to the race, everyone was actively just protecting themselves.
Yeah.
Like there was only negatives.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you can either gain one position or crash.
Yeah.
So you may as well just do nothing.
Yeah, and the points distribution is pretty minimal for a sprint as well. Like winning the sprint gets the same number of points as finishing P...
Five.
Five, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's P5
10,
in the race.
Get 10,
yeah.
Don't you?
That's so, the other thing as well, though. What's the gain for the people from P9 downwards in the sprint? That's the only issue, because it's only top eight, isn't it, that get points. And so you think, well, if you're Haas or if you're, you know, I don't know, Williams, whatever, you might think, or Alfa Romeo anyway, why are we out here? What are we doing on Saturday?
May as well save the tires.
Especially now that the sprint race doesn't actually contribute to the race. So now it's like, why are we here?
Yeah, true. Sure,
listen, anything was better than practice 1, 2, and 3 on a Friday, Saturday morning.
Look, most people don't watch practice 1, 2, and 3. It's only us hardcore fans. And that's still on a Friday.
I'm not even involved.
It's always there. It's always on the TV. I'll have it there.
Practice never even used to be televised. Like even back in like the 90s, they never used it. They didn't even televise qualifying back in the day.
We're the only sport that probably does televised practice.
Yeah.
Where else do you see practice in sports?
It's like training.
Live stream of the training.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, he scored. What a rondo.
No, I suppose they do on YouTube, don't they? It's not live stream, but they love a clip.
You're right. I think there's something there. Well, let us know if you're watching, particularly on YouTube, but wherever you can comment, let us know your ideal. Because I think now that we've seen it, okay, that's clarified. And, you know, again, I'm not against F1 trying things. I think it's important to give things a go. But I think we're still not there yet. And someone who won't be in F1 at all next year is Franz Tost. We haven't even mentioned him, who will be departing as AlphaTauri team principal at the end of this season to be replaced by Laurent Mekies. It's not Mekies, apparently. It's Mekies.
I told you this.
Mekies. valid source.
He told it himself. Yeah.
Stop mispronouncing my name. It's not Mekies.
I've heard Mekies a lot. Yeah. Never heard that.
Apparently it's Mekies. But he's moving from sporting director at Ferrari over to AlphaTauri as part of a bigger shake cup. You've got someone Bayer, can't remember his last name.
Got a new CEO, isn't
moving from the FIA over as well to AlphaTauri. Yeah. Franz Tost, who's 67 now. Been at that team for 15 years, I think.
He's the third longest serving team principal, I want to say.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
He was there forever. Just
he was at BMW Williams before Toro Rosso, end of an era. Yeah, you look at how many drivers he's brought through the system.
Yeah.
Said like 15% of the grid was through him, which is pretty
something mental.
He's the one who's been entrusted to develop that talent.
Yeah.
I think
that's a big job. I think people think that he just runs a bottom of the grid team, but no, he is basically one of the key people in the Red Bull Academy. Because Helmut Marko is, I don't know if he's personally finding them, but he's obviously heading the thing up, and they've all got scouts to get the people in F2, but Franz Tost is actually then coaching them for a year or two.
Yeah.
And he's fully developing them. Like that's an important job. He's a key part of the organization.
And the drivers, as you mentioned, the percentage of drivers on the grid that have come through AlphaTauri, it was higher last season because we still had Seb. But what, Sebastian Vettel, Carlos Sainz, Max Verstappen, that's a crazy three already. Run of three off the bat.
Clearly he's doing a good job.
Yeah, exactly. He's not bad.
Well, I mean, you know, Yuki, when he was struggling in his rookie season, I think that desire to move him from Mintel Keynes to, you know, nearer to Faenza, I think that came from, you know, Franz. And he knows what he's doing to manage these drivers through, and again, deserves a lot of credit for it. My immediate reaction reading the news, and maybe it's because I've thought for a while that team's going to be up for sale. There's significant rumours from very valid sources that they're taking offers. Apparently they turned down at 800 million, apparently they've turned down for the team.
I have it instead.
Imagine turning that down.
Do we think, because the way I see it, right, is Franz Tost is a sign of this team being Toro Rosso, basically. The B team, he leads, he's like a... I just feel like with that team, with him in charge, it will always feel like the junior team.
Sure.
I know they quite try to claim it's a sister team, but if you're trying to sell the asset that is an F1 team, like at the moment, you look at that team as the only team really in F1 with an enforced ceiling. They will never be allowed to be quicker than Red Bull, and fair enough. So if you're going to change the name, change up the personnel in charge, make it not feel like a junior team anymore, bring in a name like Nyck de Vries, who didn't even come through the Red Bull Academy.
Yeah.
Am I just conspiracy hat on, putting two and two together and getting seven?
It feels like end of an era. And it feels like he was the one holding it together as AlphaTauri Toro Rosso.
Once
he goes, it's something different at that point. Their tent peg has been pulled out. The whole thing's going to unravel and become something new, is what it feels like.
Yeah, at the precise moment, they've decided to hire 50% of the F2 grid to be Red Bull juniors.
Oh, they've always had like all of them anyway.
Yeah,
because like we're saying in the show, right? When you buy a team, you buy it for the asset. So you buy it for the staff. Again, when Braun bought out Honda, like he didn't bring in new people. The people were there.
Yeah,
it's just you change the name that's above the. And that's
you're
on
buying
the
workforce.
The
yeah. You can move to a new building, but you're buying that team of like 1,000 or 600 engineers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You can't just hire that again. You can't just put out 600 job adverts and get a whole new team. Like that doesn't happen. You have to just get the whole team as a package.
Yeah, but Lawrence Stroll bought Racing Point, bought Force India, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Racing Point. Like, obviously personnel will change over time, of course, but like you buy it for what it already has. So again, it makes sense. If I'm Red Bull and I want to sell this asset, I want to get maximum value for it, especially if this entry fee goes up from 200 to maybe 600 million.
Yeah.
Like I want to bring in like a new, like hotshot young potential, you know, Mekies is going to have a point to prove coming from Ferrari.
Yeah.
Like you bought in all these other like new CEO, you know, get it in a place where it doesn't feel like a team with an enforced scene. It feels like a team with its own genuine potential.
Yeah. The value goes up, doesn't it? Immediately. Cause it's treated as its own team right now. So yeah, I guess, you know, I can understand your conspiracy for sure. I can see definitely that there are teams or people lurking behind the scenes looking at, AlphaTauri is a good place to purchase.
That and makes the most sense.
It does, doesn't it? It makes the most sense. And yeah, I think they had to sort of, that was kind of probably the last one, isn't it? In terms of weeding it out, just to sort of make it its own team again. I think, Franz Tost was the last one. But Mekies, did you say his name is? Yeah. What a job you've got. Because next season, the season after that, to keep up the job at the minimum that Franz Tost was doing, that's going to take some tall order, unless they really just go a whole new direction and it feels like a brand new team. He's got a big job on his hands, and so does the new CEO as well. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I want to see like where maybe AlphaTauri just said, no, do you know what? We want to actually now be fighting at the front of the grid without any Red Bull connection whatsoever and completely split.
Maybe it's just like he's 67. He's been this, like, maybe he's just retiring.
Yeah. And,
maybe retiring. There's nothing more to it than that.
Yeah.
You know he'll be in.
No, conspiracy.
He might be in.
No, I hear. Yeah,
it makes sense. And again, I just feel like for everything that I've heard, and it just feels like even Red Bull, like, you know, they said themselves, didn't they? Obviously, since Dietrich passed away, like, there's new leadership in charge at Red Bull. And, you know, how do they justify running and operating an entire Formula One team? You know, it was a big passion project for Dietrich. So I think having two F1 teams, like, can't tell me that was like financially profitable for Red Bull GmbH as a business. I don't think so. Not having the second team. No. Certainly not maybe the first team.
The first team probably was, but the second team, no.
So, I mean, if anyone was to buy, who do we think? Because I think Honda makes the most sense because Honda, you know, they were powering Toro Rosso before they were powering Red Bull, remember? So they've worked with that team before. They've talked to, you've got Tsunoda already in place, young Japanese driver doing bits and maybe a Wafa. Yeah. Like, Owasa's a Honda driver as well. So I think Honda makes the most obvious sense. Maybe Andretti as well.
I was going to say Andretti's also a shout, because the factory obviously based over there as well. But and they just don't seem to be able to buy their way in, no matter what backing they've got. Yeah, because no one is letting them. Yeah,
they've got to buy a pre-existing one.
Exactly.
It makes sense. Man, Honda, would you choose Honda or Andretti? Where do you go? If you're AlphaTauri, which offer on the table? Say they're both there. Which one do you take?
Gives you the most money, I guess.
I don't care.
Yeah. It doesn't really.
They both offer, I don't know, 800 million each, the pair of them.
If you're Red Bull,
yeah,
you want Honda because they're still working with Honda for their engines.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They want to keep that good relationship, give them a seat. It's more sponsorship for them. It's more awareness rather than just a tiny little Honda logo. It's a whole team. Mm-hmm. They can like help each other out in the same way they still do. Like AlphaTauri gets parts from Red Bull, older parts.
But then they won't want
Honda and it makes them both stronger.
What happens if Honda are fighting for a championship?
Good question.
It gets muddy then, doesn't
it? But then obviously Red Bull are partnering with Ford, aren't they, from 26?
Well, yeah.
So then that Honda relationship will be less.
Because
I think they're going to stay running Honda engines till the end of 25, I think.
Yeah.
Like in terms of the badge on it. I don't know.
Yeah, their badge, like Red Bull powertrain
Honda.
It's so weird.
Red Bull Racing powertrain.
Sponsored by Ford. Yeah, it's very, very weird.
Get fucking mind up anyway.
No, exactly. Can I just say, this tweet, by the way, that's on the screen is making me crease. So basically, we haven't talked about this actually, but the FIA have basically summoned its own personnel to see the steward.
That FIA is probably the FIA.
The most FIA sentence I've ever heard in my life. They have summoned themselves to discuss what happened at the end of the race, I'm going to assume, where Esteban Ocon was trying to pit on the final lap because he waited till the end.
He's allowed to do that.
That's fine. He's calm.
Right. Yeah.
What isn't allowed in the pits is a load of people walking across the pit lane.
Not just walking across, but pulling out a barrier.
My God. It's so stupid. Like,
We all saw it coming.
Yeah. It's like the people who are dragging that barrier out, they are actual FIA employees. Yeah. They should know what's going on.
It says their own personnel. They work for the FIA. If they don't have a radio that is telling them, like, okay, go now. Yeah. They've just like looked on the track and gone,
well, it's the end of the race. Right, yeah. Okay, why not?
You guys can hook, but on the radio, you could hear Ted Kravitz being like, oh my God, like there's people on the...
Yeah,
like,
yeah the entire last lap. The entire like, last lap, he was talking about
like
that.
Stressing, because he knows someone's like possibly going to get hit. I even think like Australia, when Alex pitted right at the end, I seem to remember on his onboard, there was something like someone... Like he narrowly, it was like one person, I think.
Yeah.
But this, it was like a whole.
It was a crew.
It was like 30 people.
The whole squad lined up on this.
Honestly,
it's absolutely ridiculous.
No, it's mental. And just when I think the FIA does not have anything left in the tank to pull out this one, honestly,
we got one more in me.
We've got to summon our own personnel people. So who are you going to get to even summon these people? You got to
summon them to themselves.
Yeah. So I was out there. Yeah. And
put a mirror
I should
down.
Get this penalty.
Put a table with a mirror and have a discussion with themselves.
Yeah, the safety thing is a howler because what was it, Japan last year with the tractor on track?
Yeah, man.
Like,
it's just disaster.
It's a somebody's got, if we're not careful, someone's going to come hard on these guys and literally be like, right, we need to suspend, you know.
Yeah, the nature of this chat we're having after, if someone gets hit and has their ankle taken off, you know what I mean? That's all it takes. And this could easily have happened. Like, we watched the Ocon. If you haven't seen the Ocon on boards, find it on, like, it's sketchy.
It's very bad.
It's mad, yeah.
He's almost hit, like, three different people.
Look at these cars, right? You get used to them going 150, 160, 200 mile an hour, right?
Yeah.
But, when you're going down the pits, they're not going slow.
No.
They're still doing, like, 60 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour, whatever they're doing. Like, if you get caught by a front wing... Like,
it's game. Yeah, you're right.
You know, like when
it's
they
game put, over for your leg, man.
You know when they go and park the car sort of for the starting grid. You know when they just sort of roll it under the wheels, like on track. Like you'd be scared enough with that alone. If that's coming at you, you didn't see it. Like you'd be like, oh, crowd needs to get out of the way. When a car's coming down at what 40, 50, 60 miles an hour, what is like? Go on the motorway and do 60 miles an hour. You see what kind of damage do.
Yeah,
it's madness. It's absolutely mad. And what was it that what they used to sort of barrier it off?
It's just like a tape. It's like a rope.
Which also like a supermarket.
If you think about it, it's a ridiculous thing. Be like, oh, pit lane's closed. Don't drive in here. We'll put a small rope across there to stop these cars going 200 miles an hour at head height for the drivers as well. Like, when you think about that,
I'm so glad that we can sit here and laugh about it and whatnot because it could have been horrific. Images, you just think, come on. You know, because even Ocon's probably bricking it himself, thinking, oh my God.
He's got no idea what's going on.
No.
Yeah.
Why are they there?
I mean, it's the head-on screenshot where the DHL barrier is, where it's like, I mean, there are genuinely, there's about nine people there. Like, obviously, there's a lot of people in the area, but there's genuinely nine people on pit road that if they didn't move, he would have hit. That is just like that's not acceptable.
Because you can forgive the teams being out there. You know, like if the Ferrari garage is not too far or whatever, like some of their personnel's out on because they're thinking, oh, we're going to run to the checkered flag, blah, blah, blah. No. It's the people who know the rules, what's going on, and they know that Ocon hasn't pitted yet.
Yeah.
And we've just seen Hülkenberg do it.
It looks like a combination of media people, so photographers and stuff with all their bibs on, and then FIA actual officials.
So they should be reporting what's going on, the media people, right? Yeah. If not taking footage or whatever. But
watch the fucking race. He's not pitted.
He has to pit.
It's literally, like, I'm not being funny.
He has to pit. That car's not gone down the pit lane once.
Yeah.
It has to.
Not once.
You know what's also mad, right? It wasn't a good race.
Yeah. No.
It's not like there was other things.
It's not like they were distracted.
This was the only thing that was going to happen in like the last 10 laps of the race was, oh yeah, Ocon and Hülkenberg need to pit at some point. That's all we talked about. But like the final third of the race is, oh, they've not pitted. When they're going to pit?
They would have just seen Hülkenberg come past like 20 seconds earlier. Yeah. You think that would have reminded them.
In hell, honestly.
And they would have been like, Hülkenberg has finally pitted. Is that everyone?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Right.
Once again, the FIA.
Someone get a rope.
Finding a way to take the plaudits.
Honestly.
Take the headlines.
God, you.
Because even with the pit lane thingy with, what was it, Russell and it was the other one?
Stroll.
Yeah. We were sitting there saying, you know, is it legal? Is it not legal? And FIA don't know. And I'm sure we'll find out tomorrow about that as well. You know, Wednesday, we're going to find out, oh, by the way, George Russell's been penalised or whoever it is, right, has been penalised for this situation. And we'll start at the back of the grid in Miami. Like, it's just going to be a mess.
Well, hopefully Miami delivers a banger because it's been pretty slim pickings.
It's not been a great start to the season, has it? This has probably been one of the most underwhelming starts to F1 season that I can remember.
Yeah.
Because we've had 4 Grand Prix now. Not a single one has been one where I've been like, that was good.
No bangers.
Australia was interesting because of the end. But in terms of like the actual race, I wouldn't say it was a... it wasn't bad, actually. It wasn't bad.
Albon
had been in it at first.
It ebbs and flows. Seasons like 21, and you get, but it will come back. And again, I'm confident that given a bit more time, by the end, already talked about next season, but I think next season will be a lot more competitive.
I do. There's 19 races to go.
Jesus Christ, lads.
It's going to be a long one. But you're going to be here to enjoy the ride with us, right? Every single race, podcast every week, race watch long stream every single race.
Yeah, mate.
This honestly made it much better. If I was sat at home watching this, I would have been asleep.
See, exactly. Yeah. Sure, like, we kept you awake. No nap time for you.
No, yeah, sorry. Disrupting your sleep schedule.
Pete, Sam, thank you again for coming on.
Pleasure.
Really appreciate
always.
You both taking the time.
Pleasure.
Mr. V's Garage, McLaren Fan TV.
Yeah.
Peter on pole.
Check them out. Links are in the description down below. If you're watching on YouTube, of course. If you're watching on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you audio only listen through just your little ears.
Yeah, little nice. Yeah. Big ears. We don't discriminate.
Yeah, small ears, big ears.
Yeah. All the ears welcome.
They just shout it from the rooftops. Yeah. If you listen hard enough anywhere you are.
True, we are that loud. Where else can they find us, Darren?
Ladies and gentlemen, obviously, as we mentioned, you can find us on YouTube, you can find us on Spotify, you can find us on all audio platforms. Mm-hmm. You can also find us in the little, you know, the little view box of like a disposable camera.
Mm-hmm.
We're in there as well.
Nice. So
the visuals are in there. You just, of course, got like squint a little bit.
Can they find us in your fedora?
Yes, they can. They can actually find us in the hula hoops that are inside.
Nice
little magic trick there for everyone. And there's a rabbit in there somewhere as well. You can find us in there. And also, you can find us on the back of a Heinz baked beans tin. But that's audio only. It's just a little QR code and you just scan it.
My dad used to like cold baked beans.
Cold baked beans?
Mm, no. Ooh.
So they've not been microwaved at all?
Yeah.
Straight out of the can. Questionable.
Yeah, your dad is questionable.
It wasn't good.
Sorry, bro.
It wasn't good. That's worse than this. The pit lane thing is bad, but the beans thing is way worse.
Unforgivable.
Jesus Lord.
Right, let's wrap it, everyone. Thank you all for coming again. We'll see you next week for the Miami Grand Prix. See you on Sunday.
Peace.
And the race podcast the Tuesday after. Hopefully it's a banger. Looking good, Sam.
Yeah.
Don't forget to heat your beans.
I thought you were going to end it. I'm just sat here.
Leave that in.
No, it's good stuff.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.